Anima mahima murte.
Anima mahima murte.
Lagima praptir indriyai.
Lagima praptir indriyai.
Trakamyam shutadvishteshu.
Trakamyam shutadvishteshu.
Shakti preranam ishita.
Shakti preranam ishita.
There's actually two verses here. Text 4 and 5. Canto 11, chapter 15. Description of mystic yoga perfections. Among the eight primary mystic perfections, the three by which one transforms one's own body are called anima, becoming smaller than the smallest, mahima, becoming greater than the greatest, and lagima, becoming lighter than the lightest. Through the perfection of prapti, one acquires whatever one desires, and through prakamya siddhi, one experiences any enjoyable object, either in this world or the next. Through the ishita siddhi, one can manipulate the subpotencies of maya, and through the controlling potency called vashishta siddhi, one is unimpeded by the three modes of nature. One who has acquired kama vashayita siddhi can obtain anything from anywhere to the highest possible limit. My dear gentle Uddhava, these eight mystic perfections are considered to be naturally existing and unexcelled within this world. Purport. This is Vidyananda Maharaja's purport. Through anima siddhi, one can become so small that one can enter a stone or pass through any obstacle. Through mahima siddhi, one becomes so great that one covers everything. And through the lagima, one becomes so light that one can ride on the sun's rays into the sun planet. Through prapti siddhi, one can acquire anything from anywhere and can even touch the moon with one's finger. By this mystic perfection, one can also enter into the senses of any other living entity through the predominating deities of the particular senses. And by thus utilizing the senses of others, one can acquire anything. Through prakramya, one can experience any enjoyable object, either in this world or the next. And through ishita, or the controlling potency, one can manipulate the subpotencies of maya, which are material. In other words, even by acquiring mystic powers, one cannot pass beyond the control of illusion, however one may manipulate the subpotencies of illusion. Through vashita, or the power to control, one can bring others under one's dominion or keep oneself beyond the control of the three modes of material nature. Ultimately, one acquires through kama vasayita the maximum power of control, acquisition, and enjoyment. The word otpatikaha in this verse indicates being original, natural, and unexcelled. These eight mystic potencies originally exist in the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna in the superlative degree. Lord Krishna becomes so small that he enters within the atomic particles, and he becomes so large that as Mahavishnu he breathes out millions of universes. The Lord can become so light or subtle that even great mystic yogis cannot perceive him, and the Lord's acquisitive power is perfect because he keeps the total existence eternally within his body. The Lord certainly can enjoy whatever he likes, control all energies, dominate all other persons, and exhibit complete omnipotency. Therefore, it is to be understood that these eight mystic perfections are insignificant expansions of the mystic potency of the Lord, who in Bhagavad Gita is called Yogeshwara, the Supreme Lord of all mystic potencies. These eight perfections are not artificial, but are natural and unexcelled, because they originally exist in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thank you very much, His Holiness Sri Dayananda Goswami Maharaj. A nice purport. So I noticed that, devotees are listening very attentively to this verse and this purport, perhaps more than usual, because this is a very attractive subject matter. Acquiring mystic cities or mystic powers. Other persons hearing of these things, these amazing, almost you could say miracles. Miracle means that which contradicts the laws of nature, appears to contradict the laws of nature. Hearing of such mystic cities possessed by the Lord, but also possessed to a minute degree by the living entities, such persons may conclude that this is a fantasy. But we shouldn't reach such conclusions too hastily, considering our position in this world. Just like the ant, our activities as human beings for the ants are certainly mystical. Ants live in a little tiny place. They have their little ant hill, and they're very busy walking around all day building their houses and having their families and going out and searching for food. They could never imagine for a moment more advanced living entities moving around in cars and trains and airplanes. Somehow they heard about it. They would think, oh, this is mystical. There's living entities who can fly in machines and can ride on rails and speed around in things they call cars. This would be mystical to them. In the same way, we are like ants compared to the demigods, for example, who have these mystic powers. When you get to that level, when you're upgraded to that species of human life, these things like flying and acquiring things from distant places and becoming small and being able to read others' minds, this is everyday activity. You get upgraded. Just like when you get upgraded in your job, you have more facility because you have more responsibility. So if the demigods didn't have mystic powers, how they could perform the services entrusted to them? Vayu, Indra, Surya, Vivishwan, Ganesh, they have to control this whole phantasmagoria of the cosmos. The wind, the rain, the sun. How could they do it unless they had mystic powers? So when you get upgraded to a higher form of human life by dint of your pious activities, then you get these powers naturally. No big thing. It's like it's no big thing for us to get in a car or buy a ticket on an airplane. We flew down from Sydney to Melbourne. For an ant to even conceive of even getting to Melbourne in one lifetime is just inconceivable. But for us, it's something simple. So for demigods, nothing to fly from planet to planet. We hear how in the universe, sometimes there's universal parties. They have big yajnas. And demigods are invited to that yajna, to sit at the yajnashala, some other part of the universe. How do they get there? They walk to the sky? Take a train? No. They're there in one moment by their mystic city. So we shouldn't conclude. People shouldn't conclude. Of course, we accept, but people shouldn't conclude that mystic powers are a fantasy. There's 8,400,000 species of life, and the higher you go, the more you upgrade, the more responsibility you have, and certain things are entrusted to you to fulfill that service. And it is sometimes that people on this planet can acquire such powers. Yogis, through the Ashtanga Yoga, you can acquire these same mystic powers that the demigods have very naturally. You won't see them in ordinary people. They're too covered by the material energy for them to become manifest. But if you go to a place where people are not ordinary, like India, you just might see them. Of course, nowadays India is very much like the West, but in days of yore, Bharatvarsha, Mahaprabhu mentions, Kaviraj Goswami states in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the most pious living entities in the universe take birth in Bharatvarsha, in India. Prabhupada told the story of one yogi who, I don't know what happened. Usually the yogis are in the Himalayas, but this yogi ended up on the streets of Calcutta during the British rule. And he was pretty much aloof from everything. He was just sitting on a street in Calcutta, somehow or other, naked, doing his yogic practice. We wrote a diary chapter recently called The Yogi. We met one similar personality who lived in a park in Delhi. He didn't, you know, I said, you know, usually you guys are up in the Himalayas. He said, here or there, it's all one. Doesn't make any difference. And he was doing his meditation 10 hours a day for 40 years. So there was one yogi during the 1800s, during the British rule, and he was sitting naked in this street corner, oblivious to everything, the trams and the horses and the people and the walking by. He was just in samadhi. And some of the Britishers complained, this is naked fakir, which is really a Muslim word for sadhu. But this naked person, this heathen, Christianity, heathen sitting on naked on the street corner. And they called the constable. Constable, come and arrest this man. He's sitting naked. The police came and arrested him and threw him in the jail. Locked the door. Put the key back in their pocket and walked back outside to continue their patrol. And lo and behold, they came to the same street corner and there was the yogi still meditating. And they were very upset, confused. So they picked him up again, and he's in full samadhi. Oh, put him in the back of the paddy wagon, whatever they had in those days, and drove him back to the jail and opened the door and pushed him in and locked the door. And they walked out and back to their patrol, their duty, and sure enough, they came to the same street corner. There he was. Three or four times they did like this and they just gave up. They couldn't figure out. And I'm sure Prabhupada was at the Kumbh Mela, one of the big Kumbh Melas, and he went with a few of his disciples down to the Ganges to take a bath. And while Prabhupada and the devotees were bathing there, these young boys just came out of the water. And one of the sannyasis said to Prabhupada, I didn't see there was anyone else here but us. Certainly no one else entered the water while we were here. Prabhupada said, oh, they are yogis. They have come from the Himalayas by their mystic siddhi. He said, there's one siddhi that you can enter into water in one place high in the Himalayas and come out of the water in Haridwar or Rishikesh or anywhere, Allahabad or Calcutta. Just instantaneously, you enter into the water in one part, and within a moment, you can come out along the Ganges any thousands of miles away as you desire. And the sannyasi said, but they're just children. Papa said, no, they're 800 years old. They look like children. So there's other examples, of course. And if anyone is interested in this type of thing, if he's really determined, he can get these powers by the Patanjali yoga system. They're inherent within everyone, just like bhakti is inherent within a full knowledge. Everything is there, but it's all covered by the modes of nature, by tamas, rajas, and sattva. And the more you become purified of the modes of nature, then the more your original spiritual nature becomes manifest, and these things are naturally there. One time Prabhupada said, the soul is more brilliant than 10,000 suns rising simultaneously. Now you look at me. You don't even get a glimmer of that. 10,000 suns rising simultaneously. But that day comes when I are rid of these modes of nature, tamas, rajas, and even mundane goodness, sattva. And we come to the Sudha Sattva, or the transcendental platform. then you'll see more the brilliance of the soul manifest. And you see that in advanced sadhus or pure devotees. Prabhupada was actually effulgent. He was, even to the mundane eye, we often tell the story that when Prabhupada was crossing the street in London one time with Shamsundar, Shamsundar told us this story. He said that he was crossing the street with Prabhupada, and one of the policemen, the London policeman, he grabbed Shamsundar. He said, "Look, your teacher is glowing." Well, even to the mundane eye, it can sometimes be seen. But you have to work for that. They're not working now. They're working to remain entangled by the modes of nature. They're doing those things, those impious activities or sinful activities, which cover up more and more and more and more. So don't expect to see it in any mundane. But those who are busy uncovering the purification, cheto dharpana marjana, particularly through the process, which is very effective in this age, of chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Brilliance of the soul becomes manifest. Prabhupada was very proud. Many times reporters would say, "You're Hare Krishna people, your people are very bright-faced and happy." Jiva jago, waking up. Just like when you're sleeping. There's no visible signs of life. There is, of course, but not much. As soon as you wake, then the signs of life become it. The blinking of the eyes and the nostrils and the facial expressions and the emotions at all. So if you're sleeping under the modes of material nature, you're not going to see the real life, Krishna consciousness. But if you awake to Krishna consciousness, then that's real life. So in days of yore, you had to go and live in complete seclusion in the forests and the mountains, eat little, sleep little, be completely detached from sex life, engaging in your meditation 22, 23 hours a day. And you can see the result of that Ashtanga Yoga by which you get these mystic cities. You become very emaciated. And your finger, you see the picture in Bhagavad Gita, the yogi meditating? Little do the people know they're interested in yoga these days. They're going to the yoga club to get the fit body, the glowing skin, the bright eyes, the healthy this, powerful sex drive. That's why they're practicing the yoga. But the real yogi, you see, he becomes detached from his body. He neglects his body in preference to awakening the beauty of the soul. So he's there in the forest, and his body becomes so deteriorated, even the tigers don't want to eat him. Who wants to eat a skinny yogi? There's no meat on the bones. There's no flesh. This is the danger of living in the forest, in seclusion, that sometimes the yogis or the tigers would come and eat you up, gobble you up. This is a risk you take of Ashtanga living in the tiger. You couldn't look into the tigers coming. Snakes are coming and biting you. So the yogis would sit on the tiger skin, or they sit on the deer skin. In general, they'd sit on the deer skin because for some reason the snakes would not come where there's the deer skin. So they would sit on the deer skin, the snakes would, but tigers, they would eat you. But if you're well practiced and advanced in the path, who's going to eat? There's nothing to gnaw on, just some bone. And the hair grows so long. You don't cut the hair, you don't cut the nails. The nails actually grow back into the hand and come back out the other side. I saw one yogi in, what is that, Shiva temple in Kathmandu? Pashupati. I saw one yogi at Pashupati. He was washing his hair. He said he washed his hair once a year or something. And all the Pashupati priests were there and the local people. He was a famous yogi. And I'm not exaggerating, I promise you. In fact, there's pictures. Me and Bhimo Prasad, we got pictures. If you sit there at the stairs, his hair went to Prabhupada's Vyasasan. I don't know, how could someone's hair grow like that? It was so long. And it was on top of his head. I was thinking his neck must be sore, so high. Spiraling up there. It's long, long, long. We have a photo of it. And then his friends were helping him wash. No, not exactly. Long, long hair. The yogis, they keep their powers, their cities in their hair. And the Shaivites, this is a 200-year-old Rudraksha necklace. These beads are 200 years old. One Shaivite, I wrote about it in the diary, maybe you read. One Shaivite priest in a temple in near Sri Rangam, he was 80 or something, and he got these when he was 7 from his father. And his father got them from his father, who got them from a family guru. So he said, going back 4 generations, they keep their cities in their Rudraksha beads. So when this sadhu gave me these beads out of appreciation for what Prabhupada had done in spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, he said, I want to give you these beads so that you can continue serving your glorious master. And he was crying. He was crying when he gave them. I didn't ask for them. He just heard the story of ISKCON and Prabhupada preaching all over the world, and he was so appreciative. He wanted to give something. This is love. You give something from your heart that's very dear to you. He took them off, and he was shaking like this, and his eyes are. When he threw them at me, and they went like, I was not that quite that far, but right about there, he just threw them, and like, I said, "They're yours." And he walked out of the room, and I thought I was just get to wear them for like a few minutes. And I was like, "Wow." He said, "All the result of all my penances, all my austerities and blessings, and all the whatever I've got in this lifetime is in that necklace." And he just said, "I give it to you so you can continue the work of your," he said, "your glorious master." He said he never took it off once in his life. Om Namo Shivaya Namaha. Well, we see Shiva as a devotee, the greatest devotee. Vaishnavanam Yatashambhu. And by his mercy only, we can enter into Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. So I thought it appropriate. And whatever blessings we can get to preach Krishna consciousness, we need, because it's no easy work. So they keep their powers like that. So the yogis, they keep their powers in their hair. There was an incident in the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. There was one yogi who was abusing his mystic powers. They get the powers, but they abuse them to control people's mind, to steal, to do this and that and so forth. And he was being worshipped as an incarnation of Mahavishnu. They were worshipping the people. The Bengalis were worshipping him as an incarnation of Mahavishnu. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur wanted to, you know, reveal him for what he was, as not Vishnu, not Krishna, but a Jivatma who was pretending. So he took away all his powers. He arrested the man, put him in jail. And that night, all the family members, including Bhaktivinoda Thakur, came down with severe fever. And they were actually on the verge of death. This yogi had cursed them. He was very powerful. And the wife and the children were on the Vishnu Jwara, the fever of death. They're just about to die. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur pulled himself together somehow, sweating profusely, high fever. And he went to the jail. And he had the jailkeeper open up the cell of that so-called incarnation, that yogi. And he had the jailkeeper hold him down, and he cut his hair off. And suddenly he got his health back, and he went home, and all the family members had recovered from the fever. And the people saw that now he couldn't speak anymore, the yogi, he couldn't do anything, no magic tricks. So, yeah, they go to the forest to do like this. So if you want those cities, if you've liked this, if you were listening carefully and hearing that translation, oh, I'd like to have those cities. Yeah. You have to do, but even Arjuna couldn't do. He was not. He said, "This is too difficult." He said, "Yo yam yogas tvaya prokta samyena madhusudhana itasyaham na payami chanchalavat shtitam shtitam." Yo yam yogas, he said, this system of yoga Pukta, described by you, shtitam shtiram, Krishna, impractical. Because the mind is chanchalavat, it's very restless and unsteady. So if this was true, Prabhupada often said, if this is true for Arjuna 5,000 years ago, then what type of men do we have now? What type of women are there compared to the character of someone like Arjuna? Only a few special souls. You'll go to Kathmandu and you can see there that temple. But even in recent times, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's grandfather, he called Bhaktivinoda Thakur to his bedside when he was a very young man. And he told him that very soon he, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, would become a famous and renowned Vaishnava. That was his last statement. And in front of all the persons present, he elevated the soul through the kundalini, through the different yoga chakras. And in front of all the family members, the grandfather of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this is what, 1800 something, he left from the Brahmarandra. The soul popped out of the top of the head. And as a light, particle of light, people saw it ascend to the higher realms. In front of everybody, the family members were all there. You imagine watching your grandfather die? Because that part of the brain, or that part of the body, it's the weak point there in the skull. You know, when babies are born, the skull, because to get come out of the womb, it's a very small opening, so the head becomes compressed so that the brain doesn't become damaged. There's some space there, so the skull comes up, but it doesn't, there's space, so it just goes around the brain, doesn't crush the brain. Krishna's arranged everything at birth. So then it takes a few, was it weeks or months or even a year, for that soft spot to be covered by the skull, which grows like that. So that's a soft spot there. I think right here. Okay, ready? So the yogi, he lifts this, through his mystic powers, he lifts the soul there, and then it pops through and it goes to his desired destination. Of course, we know the desired destination of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's grandfather was no less than Vaikuntha or Goloka, but he used that technique. That technique is actually mentioned in the Bhagavatam. There's a verse. Pashya pidha gudham pranam hrid ura kanta buddhashahu aropya brahma randrena brahma nitvo shrijet tanum. Bhagavatam says, the yogi who has achieved the mystic power of svachanda mrityu, or leaving the body at death through the hole on the top of the head, blocks the anus with the heel of the foot, and then lifts the soul from the heart to the chest, to the neck, and finally to the head. Situated within the Brahmarandra, that's that point there, Brahmarandra, the yogi then gives up his material body and guides the spirit soul to the selected destination. This is all very fascinating. But that's very difficult to achieve. So therefore Krishna says to Arjuna, there's one part of the Gita, he's telling him, what are the favorable times and practical way, the best way to leave this world? And what are the unfavorable times for leaving this world? Because if you leave at an unfavorable time, when the sun is at this particular part of its course, the destination, and the particular season, he said, then your chances are not very favorable for achieving perfection. Too many obstacles. Just like we're devotees, sometimes we have bad days. Sometimes we have good days. You know, the modes of nature, the astrology, the planets, it's all like there. So some days you have a good day. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, this is a favorable time. You're going to leave your body, just like Bhishma. He chose the time. He was a devotee, bhakti, but he had all mystic perfections. Prabhupada said, devotees have all mystic perfections. So they use them sometimes in Krishna's service. Jesus walked on water to attract the attention of the people so they'd hear his message of love of God. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, this is a good time. Then he said, but don't you worry about that. to just always be engaged in my devotional service. Because if you're engaged in devotional service, if you're thinking of Krishna, if you're serving Krishna with love and devotion, it doesn't matter when you leave, he said. You'll attain the supreme destination. If you love me, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tiyatatiyanta kalevaram. Whatever mentality one has at the moment of death, that will determine his next situation. So if you're just loving Krishna in heaven or hell, when you die, if you die in Sarajevo, or you die in Moscow, or you die in Vrindavan, if you're thinking of Krishna, then you go to where the heart takes you. You go to Golok. So don't try to make all these special arrangements. I'm going to be here. Okay, 1, 2, 3. You never know when that moment's going to come. It can be in 1 second. It can be in 50 years. Just always be engaged in my devotional service. Then your destination is assured. But still, we see there are people who want these mystic powers. And for all their penance and austerity, that's all they get is mystic powers, not pure devotional service to the Lord. There's a difference between mystic powers and love of God. At the end of this particular chapter that we're reading, Krishna concludes. This chapter, like I was looking at the, because obviously myself and Prahlad and others are going to be lecturing for the next week or 3 weeks, and I was looking at every verse is about mystic powers. I think, well, I only got one class about mystic powers in my head. What am I going to do for the next 30 days? Desham satadayuktanam bhajatam. But Krishna concludes, I skipped ahead, like sometimes when I was young, I read a book and I couldn't wait to see what the end would. So I'd go to the end of the book and read the last chapter first. See what the conclusion was. So Krishna says at the end of this chapter, after listing all these mystic cities and how you get them and what the benefits are, he says, learned experts in devotional service state that the mystic perfections of yoga that I have mentioned in this chapter are actually impediments and are a waste of time for one who is practicing the supreme yoga by which one achieves all perfection in life directly from me. Yoginam abhisarvesham. Krishna says in Gita, of all yogis, the one who serves me with loving devotion, he is the best. Why do we consider mystic, I mean, as amazing as they are, it'd really be easy, it'd be much better than having to work all year and then fly to India just to be there in 2 seconds. But why don't we consider these mystic perfections such a great thing? Because actually it's, as it's mentioned in the purport here, it's just dealing with the subtle nature of Maya, or illusion. It's actually very childish. As a child plays with his toys, he entertains himself by playing with the toys. A yogi entertains himself with playing with the subtle material energy. It's material. He's just playing around with it. He's got some powers. He can do some, just like a magician. It must be fun to be a magician, a real magician. And just like bedazzle people with your powers. But what do you get out of it in the long run? These mystic powers are not in the ultimate sense something spiritual because they're only dealing with matter. Spiritual means dealing with the spiritual energy. You're on the transcendental platform. Mamchayo vibhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuya kalpate. One who engages in the process of devotional service at once transcends the modes of material nature and comes to the level of Brahman. We are even greater than yogis. We're not saying this to make become proud or advertise it. We're greater than yogis because we're engaged in a process which transcends the modes of nature. We've come to the level of Brahman just by going out on the streets of Melbourne and walking down the street with our drums and brass kartals singing Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Yeah, but can you fly in the air? Can you be? No, we're getting something greater. Oh, Govinda, feeling your separation, I'm considering a moment to be like 12 years or more. Tears are flowing from my eyes like torrents of rain. I'm feeling all vacant in the world. We would rather cry one genuine tear of love of God than be able to fly all over the universe. For us, that's more satisfying. What can you get? What reciprocation does the material energy have? Either in the toy of a child, a truck, a red truck, or a Barbie doll, or more subtly, flying through the air or walking on the water, just different ways of getting pleasure from the material energy. What reciprocation does a material, what can you get from a material object? How much is there to be gained from associating with the material object? How much more important are relationships with your family and your friends and your lover? Especially so in Krishna consciousness. But to speak of the supreme lover, Krishna, is much more fun, it's much more exciting, it's much more satisfying to associate with in a loving relationship with Krishna than it is to get some pleasure out of a Barbie doll, a truck, or a mystic power. I mean, the yogis would probably be offended. You are saying that my powers are equal to a Barbie doll? Playing with a Barbie doll? Yes, sir. Just more in a more subtle way. Our happiness comes from love. Loving Krishna. Supreme lover. Krishna is so amazing. He can reciprocate the loving sentiments of every created being to their full satisfaction. Savai pumsham para dharmo yato bhaktir doksaje haitukiya patiyata yayatma shupashidati. The supreme occupation for all mankind is that by which one can attain to the loving service of the Lord. Such service must be a haitukiya patiyata, unmotivated, uninterrupted. Amala bhakti, pure devotion, like the residents of Vrindavan, like the gopis. And what do you get? Yayatma shupashidati. Full satisfaction. Shantushti. You become happy. And we're not attracted by these mystic powers. Yoginam api sarvesham madgaten antaratmana shradavan bhajate yomam sa me yuktatmano mata. Therefore Krishna concludes, and of all yogis, the one with great faith who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental, loving service to me. He is most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all. That's my opinion. All right, you have your opinion. Krishna's opinion. He's very humble. He's saying, this is my opinion. This is the fact. This is the truth. So real yoga is actually the bhakti yoga. Because Krishna is attracted by that love. Krishna is not attracted by the gymnastics of the yogi. That doesn't really attract him. Just imagine if a man was trying to impress his wife and he started doing gymnastics and aerobics. And she's more inclined. You know the nature of women. If you give them a gift, some nice gift, if you give them diamonds, gold or something like that, then they're pleased with that service, not watching you do some gymnastics at the gym. That's a very gross analogy, but time is short, so we have to use analogies. So Krishna's pleased when we serve him. In the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, Krishna says to Uddhava, "My dear Uddhava, you may know it from me that the attraction I feel for devotional service rendered by my devotees is not to be attained even by the performance of mystic yoga. Philosophical speculation, ritualistic sacrifices, study of Vedanta, the practice of severe austerities, or giving everything in charity. These are, of course, very nice activities." And you were listening very carefully about the mystic powers. "But they are not as attractive to me as a transcendental service rendered by my devotees." By that devotional service, one gains Krishna, Krishna's abode, dissociation of all of Krishna's devotees. Narada Muni said to the Pandavas, "You Pandavas, hey, you Pandavas, you're the most fortunate persons in the whole wide world. The Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared in this world and is presenting himself to you as an ordinary human being. He is living with you and covering himself to others. Others cannot understand that he's the Supreme Lord, but he's living with you as a cousin, a friend, and a messenger." That's better than getting some mystic powers, merging with God. as we often say, Prahlad, I learned this example from Sri Prahlad. It's better, we don't want to become the sugar, we want to taste the sugar. We don't want to become God, we want to taste the bliss of serving God. So, that personal association is infinitely better than the knowledge one gets through jnana or the mystic powers. And that's why eventually we see that many materialists are renounced sense gratification in preference to devotional service. Yogis give up their yogic powers to become devotees. And impersonalists, they give up their Brahman realization to come to devotional service. The six Goswamis, they were very opulent materially, but they renounced everything to become the servants of Lord Chaitanya. Durvasa Muni, he became a devotee. He was a mystic yogi by association with the Lord. And Shukadeva Goswami was a realized monist, but he gave it up in favor of pure devotional service. So devotional service is the highest. In yoga, you get sat, which you get eternity. In jnana, you get chit, or knowledge. But in devotional service, you get that plus ananda bliss. Sat, chit, ananda. You can get sat and chit by doing that, but you don't get the ananda. And you get the ananda, Krishna's very kind, he reciprocates very quickly. You get the ananda very early in the process. In fact, you just come to the temple, you stumble into the temple, maybe somewhat intoxicated, no money, out of work, no friends, and you just come to the 24-hour kirtan, and somehow you find yourself here, and then at the end of that kirtan, you're in bliss. And that ananda, which you are not fully appreciating, fully tasted, but still, even that is better than any mystic power. Something genuine. But if need be, Krishna will give you the mystic powers. Jesus had them. He displayed them. Bhishma Dev had them. He was shot with so many arrows, but, and you know, all over his body. You see the painting. All over the body. But he's maintaining his life airs in his body so that he could hear some more glories of Krishna and speak to Yudhishthira and the Pandavas. One time a magician, it was kind of a lower grade mystic yogi, a magician came to the temple, in Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, and wanted to, for a fee, make a show for the Gurukul kids. So the Gurukul headmaster said, okay, it's something harmless. So Prabhupada's secretary told Prabhupada, oh, there's a magician doing a magic show for the children. So Prabhupada said, let us go. Everyone likes a magic show. So they went, and then he did so many things, and all the kids were mesmerized, and he even put a coin in Prabhupada's ear and pulled it out the other side. Pulled a rabbit out of a hat. Now, Prabhupada was enjoying the show, but of course, he was there for a purpose to instruct the devotees. So then Prabhupada laughed. He said, you can make the coin disappear, sir. You can make the rabbit disappear. But can you make birth, disease, and old age disappear? And the yogi said, no, sir, I cannot do that. Prabhupada said, I can do that. Therefore, I'm a better magician than you. And one time, someone asked some guest, asked Prabhupada, sir, what, they, because Prabhupada, they, there was some discussion of Sai Baba and his tricks. So the guest said, and sir, what, Prabhupada, he said to Prabhupada, what mystic powers do you have? And Prabhupada said, my mystic powers, said, all these devotees, this is the result of my mystic power, my disciples. What? Yes, they have given up sense gratification, they have given up sinful life, and they're Vaishnava serving the Supreme Personality of God. This is my mystic power. That I've been able to attract them away from Maya and into the devotional service. This is something very Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suyute Sachara Charam. Krishna says this divine energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature is very difficult to overcome. But one who surrenders unto me, which means his representative, can easily overcome. So it's miraculous what we've achieved just by taking the vow. The vow. No more meat eating, no more intoxication, no more illicit sex, no, and 16 rounds. That is miraculous. By the mercy of Guru and Krishna. So we get everything in Krishna consciousness. It's the highest goal, and at the same time, it's the easiest goal. And everyone should accept it. Everything can be achieved. Even what we need materially, that was the sense of the verses we had up in Sydney. Even material prosperity, by the grace of the Lord, it comes so the devotee can be peaceful to practice Krishna consciousness. And if you need mystic powers, remember Guru Das telling us that when the altar collapsed in London, they had a makeshift altar for Radha London Ishwara. Just before the installation ceremony, they put the big marble deities on this very flimsy platform. And just before the ceremony was to begin, the weight of the deities started to break the table. It started to collapse, and the deities were falling off. Surely they would have been broken. Prabhupada rushed forward. He jumped up from the Vyasasana, and he held the table by itself. Radha and Krishna, he held them by his two hands like this. The table had broken, but he was holding the platform like that until 6 or 8, 10 brahmacharis came and took that weight away from him. And he said, and afterwards, Guru said, how did Prabhupada hold that two deities by us? So if you need the mystic powers, they'll be there. Generally, they're not demonstrated by the pure devotee because people may follow him for the wrong reason. Oh, he can do the mystic power. The pure devotee wants the population to follow him because of the knowledge he's giving, how to become a devotee of the Lord. So everything can be achieved. Therefore, Bhagavatam concludes, may there be all good fortune throughout the universe, and may all envious persons be pacified. May all living entities become calm by practicing bhakti yoga, for by accepting devotional service, they will think of each other's welfare. Therefore, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence, Lord Sri Krishna, and always remain absorbed in thoughts of Him. Gantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Hare Krishna. Thank you.